1, 2, 3.
Welcome to In the Studio with a 21st Century Perspective on History's Greatest Rock Albums. I'm Redbeard, and today in the studio, it's the anniversary since the adage, less is more, was proven from the album Foreigner 4.
It's a great beginning for chapter two of what Foreigner is and should be. And I honestly think we have yet to reach the kind of complete album that Foreigner 4 was. Again, I think we have to strive for something different, but as good. It's to me, it is the high point of Foreigner.
Yeah,
hi, I'm Lou Graham.
Hi, this is Mick Jones of Foreigner in the studio for Foreigner 4.
In the late 1970s, the band Foreigner seemed destined to become a classic case of too much too soon. The band's first, 1977's Foreigner, and then Double Vision in 78, were multi-platinum hits of unprecedented proportions, and Foreigner entered the rock and roll arena as a full-blown star. It was heady stuff, to be sure, but that kind of rapid success is often a recipe for quick decline as well. For Foreigner, the critical point came after their third album, Head Games, which was released in 1979. Head Games didn't do as well as the first two albums, and Foreigner band members started to blame each other. The result was the departure of two of Foreigner's original members, Ian MacDonald and Al Greenwood. There were serious questions about whether the remaining four should even continue as the band Foreigner. In the end, Mick Jones, Lou Graham, Rick Wills, and Dennis Elliott decided to forge ahead, and the result was their most successful album ever, the album of the year in 1981. It was number one on the American charts for 10 weeks, and its name, simple but significant, was Foreigner 4. Mick Jones, Foreigner's founder and lead guitarist, reflects on the crises and the triumphs that marked the beginnings of Foreigner 4.
No, we'd started to rehearse for the 4 album. I was so frustrated because I felt that the direction of the band was getting so diverse, with everybody wanting to express themselves. You know, the time, I guess, you know, it's a natural evolution. The time had come when I wasn't hogging the writing. I was ready to be challenged by anybody else's ideas. And as far as I was concerned, what the object was to achieve was achieving a great album, you know, the best that we could do, the best that we could come up with. And I was pretty strong-minded about it. And, you know, I knew that certain things were going to dilute the direction of the band as in what still was to me a formative stage of the band. You know, we still hadn't to that point proved ourselves particularly, you know, although I must say the euphoria added to the confusion of the Head Games era. You know, we did get a bit carried away. We were carried away, I guess, a little bit at that point, all believing in ourselves a bit. And I certainly was, you know. I thought I was pretty smart at that point after what we'd achieved, you know. And it went to my head, I guess. You know, it went to everybody's head to a certain extent. But luckily, we were able to come back from that and get down to the meaning of things.
From Foreigner 4, Nightlife has kicked out the jams in many a car's stereo just after sundown since July 1981, written by Mick Jones and Lou Gramm. Even though he had founded the group, and in spite of the fact that their third album, Head Games, did sell past the million mark, Mick Jones, a veteran of the English blues rock band Spooky Tooth, knew the warning signs all too well.
Well, I saw the band disintegrating, you know, as a band, and I thought, and I had to sort of take stock of things, and I was the one to sort of bring it to a point, you know, to bring it out. But I sat with Lou one night. I think we were in Japan at the end of a tour around the Head Games time, and I said, "Look, this is just falling apart." You know, this. You know, I mean, I was almost ready to leave at that point. I was getting a bit disillusioned. Rearing its head at that point with me.
Ex-Foreigner lead singer Lou Gramm remembers how it went.
After we toured Japan as the last leg of the Head Games tour, the whole touring of that album was an uphill struggle, I think. And we just had to kind of reflect on what we wanted to do with our careers following this. And I secretly was of the mind that if it couldn't be a little more fulfilling for me, that I would rather move on. And Mick, as I learned later, had similar feelings. And at that point, we weren't tossing around personnel changes. We actually began to write and rehearse for Foreigner 4 with the six-piece band intact. And it was only after a week in the studio that the kind of undercurrent and dissatisfaction came to a head, and I think the changes were made, or I think the band would have fallen apart right in the studio.
I want you to tell me where our love went.
So band leader Mick Jones took the drastic action of firing original Foreigner members Ian McDonald and Al Greenwood while in the studio, paring the group back to just four. The revised Foreigner lineup left Mick Jones with mixed feelings.
I kind of sort of looked at it coldly, and I realized that there was a core of the band, as far as I could feel, and it was between myself and Lou and Dennis. You know, that was the core that had survived from the beginning. And Rick came along with that at that point, too. And that's how we, through many deliberations and painful times, we decided to take the band down to four people. That was probably the toughest part of the whole thing.
It felt more like a group as a four-piece band than it ever did as a six. And I don't mean it to be cold, because there was camaraderie. We had been through a lot as a six-piece band, and it was, on one hand, it hurt because it was tearing a piece of the band away. On the other hand, it was so much more fulfilling, and as a career move, it was the right thing to do.
City, and my prospects looking thin.
Coming up next, one of the songs of the decade appears on Foreigner 4. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Mick Jones and former Foreigner lead singer Lou Gramm for the Thaniversary of Foreigner 4.
Hi, I'm Lou Gramm.
Hi, this is Mick Jones of Foreigner in the studio for Foreigner 4.
And I'm Redbeard, Foreigner's biggest album, Foreigner 4. With the disgruntled former members gone and the tension released, a new creativity in the songwriting seemed to flow, according to first former Foreigner lead singer Lou Gramm, followed by guitarist Mick Jones.
Some of them are pretty natural. I mean, you almost know right away. Some things you got to turn them inside out. I mean, I know a lot of these things. I still have cassettes of the early demos laying around on some of the really big ones, and they don't sound anything like. You wouldn't even recognize them, I'm telling you.
Yeah, it's also I mean, the song develops from the initial idea, then you start throwing it around with everybody, and it's everybody else's input as well that comes in, and some songs really are immediate, and you don't really have to mess with them.
You don't want to mess with them.
No, but for the most part, I think you have to put a bit of work into them and see how they fly.
You
The number four charting hit from the summer 1981, Urgent from Foreigner 4, with its wild, distinctive sax solo from Motown legend Junior Walker. Not known for appearing on other people's albums, Junior Walker just happened to be playing a club date in Manhattan at the time that Foreigner was recording their fourth album in New York City. So Mick Jones impulsively invited Junior Walker to record the solo on a song from Foreigner 4 called Urgent. Foreigner lead singer Lou Gramm remembers how it went down.
He made it down to the Lone Star and coerced Junior into coming to play on the song. Junior had never heard of Foreigner, never heard of the band, didn't think one way or the other about the song. So he tuned up and he made one pass at the solo and said, well, that's it. I'll be seeing you. But, it took Mick and Mutt and all their combined charm to get Junior to make two or three more passes. And between those two or three passes, there was the goods there.
Lou admits that one of the biggest songs of the 1980s, Foreigner's Waiting for a Girl Like You, had humble beginnings.
As we were rehearsing one day, Mick was checking his piano to see that things were in tune. And I had my Walkman running, of all times. And he started, he checked the octaves on the white keys and just started whacking the black keys to see if things were in tune. And there was this very kind of haunting, dun, 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 which he was just hitting randomly. He hit it once, and I captured it on tape. Two or three days later, when him and I sat down to try and find a chorus for this song, I found this little spot on my tape where he'd been checking the piano tuning and played it for him. And we focused in on those four bars. A chorus was born.
Love some.
Waiting for a Girl Like You from Foreigner 4. That song locked into the number two position on the hit charts for 10 consecutive weeks in 1981.
Quite a stunning young lady walked into the room just before we did it. I've never heard him sing like that before. We had been singing it, and you know, Lou very often would, you know, when we'd be writing, you know, I'd express certain things the way I would sing the thing, and he would sing it and take my emotion, and somehow that was the first time that I really felt that he got in, he was inside, you know, we were one person on that. You know, it was like, I couldn't believe what I was hearing. It was like, whether the girl in question, or, you know, the fact that there was somebody in there he was singing to, or whether, however it was just another part of that very unexplainable song, you know. To me, it's still a mystery to me, that song.
I walked through that door, I felt so close to a
still to come, one of the definitive rock anthems of all time. Follow In the Studio on Facebook and hear much more at inthestudio.net. I'm Red Beard. You're in the studio with former Foreigner lead singer Lou Gramm and Mick Jones of Foreigner on the anniversary of Foreigner 4.
Hi, I'm Lou Gramm.
Hi, this is Mick Jones of Foreigner in the studio for Foreigner 4.
Thanks again, guys. Foreigner 4, their biggest album ever, selling over 7 million copies just in America. I'm Red Beard. Foreigner founder Mick Jones doesn't fail to see the irony in the band's artistic and commercial peak coming precariously close to Foreigner breaking up.
Each level you get to, I guess it's like a game, you know, you have to sort of go through some hardship if you want to get, or some struggling and whatever, if you want to get to that next stage, you know. I consider I'm still doing that in a way, you know, and every now and again, you know, you're riding high and suddenly you have to go through that sort of, that hard time again to sort of, it's sort of sent in a way to remind you of what, of where you are, you know. That's sort of a personal way of looking at it, which I sort of look back over the years and think that's sort of the way it's been, you know. And I'm kind of quite prepared for that in the future too.
A girl on the moon, a
great slide guitar from Hugh McCracken on Foreigner's song Girl on the Moon from the album Foreigner 4, which ascended to number one in the U.S. and stayed there for 10 weeks in 1981. Ex-singer Lou Gramm, who survived benign brain tumor surgery in the late 90s and now has his own band, assesses Foreigner 4.
I think as a band, we finally approached our capabilities. We reached a kind of a group sound. We showed the versatility to extremes, from things like Jukebox and I'm Gonna Win to Girl on the Moon and Waiting for a Girl Like You. We silenced a lot of doubters. We proved live that we were a band to be reckoned with, not just an also-ran when it comes to touring. And I think it was a great beginning for chapter two of what Foreigner is and should be, the kind of complete album that Foreigner 4 was. To me, it is the high point of Foreigner.
A timeless song on Foreigner 4 is a classic rock and roll fable, the story of every kid who has ever had a guitar and a dream. Here's Mick Jones.
Well, it was a song that started out initially that Lou had written a sort of a beginning to, and I think it was called Take One Guitar at the time. It went through a tremendous amount of changes, and gradually through, I think one day Lou and Matt and I just jammed in the studio, and we came up with a sort of a complete song. That's when it became Jukebox Hero, which was a title that I'd had in stashed away for a while. From that, the story sort of evolved. Something that hit me one night, we were playing... I think it was Cincinnati we were playing, and it was where they'd had some crowd trouble and a couple of people had been killed or injured at that Who concert there. I think we played there sort of a couple of months after the event, and I saw a kid backstage, you know, and I was feeling a bit strange about the fact that, you know, people had been killed and, you know, all the things that had gone on in this particular Coliseum that we were playing. And I saw this kid backstage, and it was raining, and somehow that's the image I took and sort of pursued that as sort of from that point of that backstage door and a fan that was back there, you know, it was sort of a parody about what we go through and what, you know, is a deep lying, underlying thing and attracts us to want to do what we do.
Standing in the rain with his head hung low, couldn't get a ticket, it was a sold out show.
Jukebox Hero, come stop.
co-writer and singer Lou Gramm talks about Foreigner's jukebox hero.
The lyrical thread of that song is based around the groups that I almost saw when I was growing up, the tickets I couldn't get a hold of to see Zeppelin and Hendrix and The Who. Myself and a crowd of other kids, strangers, who had one thing in common, that they wanted to be there, whether they were inside the building or out. And we used to have our heads pressed against the backstage door, just waiting to get a glimpse and just trying to get as much of that sound and the feeling of what was going on inside that auditorium. It's an intense experience, and I wouldn't have traded it for anything. And to put it into words, to put the theme down, I think it's one that many, many kids identify with, and the dream to be up there themselves.
I'm Redbeard. We'll be back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests, Lou Graham and Mick Jones. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2016, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brunet, theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.
Some secondhand store, didn't know how to play it, but he knew for sure. One guitar, it felt good in his hands. It didn't take long to understand. Just one guitar, slung way down low, was a one-way ticket, only one way to go. So he started rocking. He just can't stop. He gotta keep on rocking. He's got to stay on top. He's just a jukebox hero. He's a jukebox hero. He just wanna be a jukebox hero. Jukebox hero. In a town without a name, in a heavy downpour, and thought he passed his own shadow by the backstage door. Like it dripped through the past to the day in the rain. And that one guitar made his whole life change. Now he needs to keep rocking. He just can't stop. He gotta keep on rocking. Stay on top. He just wanna be a jukebox hero. He's a jukebox hero. He just wanna be a jukebox hero. Jukebox hero.